Hi, I'm Sarah. I'm a mom of three kids, ages 2, 5, and 7, and I live in Southern California.
And I'm Megan. I am the mom of 5 kids, ages 6 through 17, and I live in Michigan. This is the Mom Hour, part of the Life Listened Network. Hey, everyone, and welcome to episode 3 of the Mom Hour. I am Megan Francis, and I'm here with my friend Sarah Powers, as always. Hey, Sarah.
Hey, Megan.
So we're so excited about the shows that we've had so far. We're getting a great response, and I just wanted to make sure that you know, if you're listening to this, you know, down the road, or if you're listening to it right the day it comes out, which I hope you are waiting breathlessly for new episodes, you can find all the episodes at themomhour.com. And there's the network site, which is lifelistened.com, where you'll also find episodes of The Home Hour, The Style Hour, and The Right at Home Moms, both good things to check out.
Definitely.
So before we get started, I wanted to announce our sponsor for May and June and to give them a little shout out and tell you a little bit more about what we'll be discussing in the months to come. So for May and June, our sponsor is Kimberly-Clark, who is the parent company of some of my favorite brands, including Viva paper towels, which if you know me at all, you know I won't use any other paper towel besides Viva. I have some really good reasons for that, which we'll talk about in a future episode. And Scott Brand and Cottonelle and a lot of other great household brands that you probably already use. And this is part of a campaign called the Celebrate Family Values campaign, which the word values being kind of, you know, a double meaning, both values as in what we enjoy doing with our families and how we, you know, interact with them and all that. And also, you know, value. Mm-hmm. If you go to pickupthevalue.com, you'll see more about that there.
Awesome.
So we will be talking more specifically about this partnership in a future episode. But for today, I'm going to let Sarah announce our topic for today and kind of lead us into the conversation.
Great. Thanks, Megan. And thanks to Kimberly-Clark. We're excited to work with them for the next couple months. So today we're talking about what does a healthy media diet look like for moms? And so we're going to be talking a lot about using social media, since that's a big portion of media, but also other forms of media, what we're reading online and offline, and how we can kind of keep that in balance. I think most moms can relate to a feeling of spending a little too much time on the Facebook or staring at the phone.
What?
And
me?
You, not me. And so, Megan, I think, well, let me just throw this at you. You've explained how that makes you feel when you get into kind of one of those cycles, and I think you explain it really well. Just kind of how what it's like when you're in that cycle of a little too much on the Facebook, too much on the internet. You've described it almost as an anxiety, right?
Yeah, for me it starts to feel like, well, first there's a zone out nature of it. So for a while it feels kind of relaxing, but then it's that diminishing returns, right? So at some point you feel like you should be doing something and you're not, and you're active, but you're not really accomplishing anything. So for me, it turns into this anxiety, and it's really difficult for me to pull myself out of it because I'm still sitting there. It's like an active inactiveness, inactivity. Mm-hmm. So you're just sort of passively absorbing what's going on. You're not really getting anything done that's meaningful to you, but it's hard to pull yourself away because you're clicking and reading and absorbing and all this stuff. So I find, you know, I love the internet. I like Facebook. I have a love-hate relationship with Facebook, I guess I could say. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I really enjoy social media and have.
Mm-hmm. I do too.
And have since I got online, you know, 18 years ago. Back then it was forums and chat rooms. Same difference though, right? It was all about connecting with other people, which I love to do in this sort of medium. But there's a breaking point, and sometimes you don't always know you're there till you've fallen over the other side.
Right. So, so that's what we're going to talk about, is ways to cut back or go cold turkey. You and I both kind of done a little bit about that.
Yeah.
So I think we'll start kind of talking about that. A few strategies for like just getting out of that cycle of too much. And then after that, I thought we'd talk about, I've been really making an effort in the last few months, probably since the new year, to kind of introduce new and better forms of media into my media quote unquote diet. I've been reading a little bit more offline. I started getting the newspaper again randomly once a week. Just a few different things that, just like any sort of, if we're using the diet analogy, putting the good stuff in and not just focusing on cutting maybe the less positive stuff out.
Right.
So that's kind of how I'd like to structure today, is we'll talk about some ways, because I think everybody can use a reminder. You just know when you need to cut back a little bit. And then after that, we'll move on to maybe some ways to kind of change up the media in your life. And I have to say before we get started that I just finished listening to you and Karen Walrond talk about curating a life you love, which was the most recent Home Hour episode. And I was loving and thinking about how these two topics are really related, because what we're really talking about is curating the type of media that we're taking in, especially as moms with really young kids, when that may be some of your only like conversations and connection with the outside world. But for those who aren't listening to the Home Hour, definitely go listen to that one, and we'll link to it in the show notes, because it's a lot of the same themes of what are we choosing where to spend our time and our energy on things that are like feeding us good things. So this is really almost just like a media subset of that discussion, which was awesome. That's a good point. I loved it.
Oh, good. I'm so glad it was.
Yeah, it was a great, great conversation. So let's kind of start with the basics, which is you and I think both have tried different things to lighten up on the Facebook addiction or to stop the Pavlovian looking at your phone every 5 seconds. So,
yeah.
Okay, so this is kind of funny. One of the things everybody says is to disable notifications, which is smart. If you are an iPhone user, you can go into your settings, and with each individual app, you can tell it not to ping you or beep you or even pop up. And you did that recently, didn't you, Megan, or have you done that?
Yeah, I did. You know what? I realized that like almost every single thing I did on my phone made some kind of sound.
Right.
And when I would get on my phone, there'd be 8 million little banners and things beeping at me and stuff. So I disabled all of my sound notifications, except I think one, I still get a sound like a buzz when something happens on Twitter, only because I don't, because Twitter activity has gotten so low for me.
Right.
I'll literally forget to check in otherwise. Right. So it didn't bother me that it was like that.
Right.
Facebook, I never downloaded the Messenger app.
I remember that was a big deal six months ago
or whatever. Yeah. I decided if I desperately need to check my Facebook messages and I'm not near my computer, I can go through my browser.
Yeah, you can go on Safari.
It just adds like, you know, a couple extra steps, and it's not fast, but I don't care because I don't want to be on my phone all day checking my Facebook messages. So it made a huge difference. I mean, even my texts now, I do, because I don't get that many texts, and often they're from my kids. It'll make like a little buzz, but then it's not something that just, it's not like a bleep or a ping, and I don't get that many. And it also doesn't go to my lock screen.
Yeah. Yeah.
It just feels better to me.
I agree. I actually was kind of like that from the early iPhone days. I didn't want, and it drove me crazy that you'd hear a sound when an email came in. Because like to me, and this is like several years ago, maybe 6 years ago when I got an iPhone for the first time, that like checking my email, like I wanted it to be an active, not a passive thing. Like it's one thing for a text or something, which technically bears a little more urgency. But so I feel like I've been pretty clean with notifications from the beginning. I've never really liked them. But the kind of the other half of that, and I think you and I have both tried that, is removing the Facebook app from your phone. Have you done that altogether?
I don't have the app at all. Yeah, I don't have the app either.
So you don't have the Facebook app at all on your phone. Okay.
Nope.
So that was like a big time suck for me.
The first step for me was removing that app and then not downloading the Messenger app.
I don't use Facebook Messenger that much, but scrolling through the Facebook feed mindlessly was for sure something I was guilty of. So I will like every 6 months, I'll take the app away from my phone. And then you know what I do? This is horrible. I just look at it on Safari. It always lasts like a good like month or 6 weeks, and then they'll have some reason that I feel like I want to check. And the other thing I should say for people who don't know your lifestyle and my lifestyle is the big difference between you and me is I sit at a computer I think a lot less than you do these days, because you're full-time work from home and your kids are in school full-time. So during school hours, you at least potentially have computer access. And I have young kids at home. So my phone really does allow me to, you know, keep up on things and work a little bit. And I really only sit down at my computer for about an hour and a half a day. So that's maybe a difference too, is why the phone was like a bigger need for me to break away.
But you know what? And you're also
so
a little bit
indicative of addiction that I'm also moving the phone. Moving the app and then look at it on the browser.
You're also sort of in a different, I mean, you're a little bit younger than me, and I know you're not a lot, but you're also younger as a parent in mom years.
I'm definitely younger than you.
And I feel like the mobile thing is much more of a your generation of parent thing than mine. I mean, first of all, I hate typing on my phone.
Yeah.
So I will jump through a lot of hoops to not have to do that. If I could, you know, shrink my computer down and carry it around in my pocket, and then at the touch of a button have it pop open and be like a real full size keyboard. And I'm not talking one of those ones that they say they're full size and they're not.
Right. For real. Yeah.
That would be probably dangerous for me. But I'm not really, for me, on going on my phone is truly mindless because I'm probably not going to interact in any meaningful way. So, you know, you've probably experienced this, Sarah. We've been working together for a long time now. Well, I'm sure you have. I probably haven't pointed out all the times it's happened, but you can probably tell when you've sent me an email and I've checked it like late at night or early in the morning before I got out of bed. And then I think I responded to you and I didn't because I meant, you know, I meant to, but I thought, ugh, I'll wait till I'm at my keyboard and do it then. So there's that. There is a little bit of a difference there.
Yeah.
The other thing is, you know, you mentioned still checking on Safari. I do that too, but I do have to say, I do think that there's a difference not having that app. It, to me, it makes a difference.
It does.
Even if it's just one more step I have to go through.
Yep. I agree. And that's why it does work for me too. I just sometimes when I get in that cycle, again, it's a little bit of like the downward spiral cycle, then you can still find me a little mindlessly. So I have another couple quick tips on the phone. If phone, like smartphone usage is an issue. And one of them you hear a lot, which is just put it far away. I have a little docking charger that's just slightly out of reach in my kitchen because it's behind. Well, there's a little desk nook in my kitchen. I have a monitor there for the computer, and this is sort of behind it. So you have to like physically reach for the phone.
Right.
And that really does, and people will say like, you know, in your car to put it completely out of reach. And I think that it's very simple, but I think that is actually effective. If you've identified that you're just kind of glancing mindlessly at the phone too much, to put it out of reach. And then part two of that is that I went through and gave different people in my life different text tones or groups of people. So like there's what it sounds one way when my husband texts me, it sounds another way if it's my family.
Yeah.
And what it does is it just gives me, if my phone is out of reach and I hear that it's like we have a huge like posse of neighborhood friends. And if it's the neighbors at a certain time, I know that probably all it says is, you know, they're going to be out front playing with the kids if we want to join. If it's like a different tone, I might think, oh, I should probably look at that because I was waiting for an answer from them on something. So it just is like a little bit of, and often it will keep me from going to look. I'll actually ignore it because I know that it's not important in that moment because of the sound. So that was something that I think was like a proactive thing I did that has really helped.
Those are really good tips. I have a couple of things that are a little more scorched earth that I'll share.
Drop your phone in the toilet?
Well, I mean, I've done that too on accident, but no, and break it a million times. No, those never last. You just buy a new one. But there's a couple of things I've done. First of all, I don't use Pinterest anymore. Giving up Pinterest was a weird thing for me. And I felt like I should be on it because bloggers were all told at that point when it got popular that we had to be on it. So I still am on it. I mean, I still have an account. But I couldn't tell you the last time I got on Pinterest on my phone. And when I get on it on my computer, it's when I have a very specific purpose. Like I'm going there to search like, you know, for something really, really specific, like a recipe. I use it kind of the way I would myrecipes.com. And then I'm out. I don't scroll. And I noticed for a while, it was again, the law of diminishing returns. I was scrolling. It's not my it's not my medium. It's not my platform. It's not something that speaks to me a whole lot. So I'd get on it and I'd feel like I was spending the whole time trying to make sense of it and not really enjoying myself. And I'd start to see the same pictures over and over and that would annoy me, but I didn't care enough to take the time to tailor, I guess, to curate the experience for myself. So it just never got any better. And one day I thought, why am I doing this? Why am I trying to force myself to use this platform I don't really care about? Whereas for like me, Instagram, I know you're into Instagram
too.
Yeah,
I love Instagram.
It's just, I just like it. It never feels like high pressure to me. I don't feel like I have to be looking for anything specific. I'm just there to look at people's pictures. That's it. It just feels very pure. I just know exactly what I'm there for.
Yeah.
And that, you know, your miles will vary with that. I mean, some people love other platforms, you know, that.
Well, I think, and I think the point there is then to pay attention to what are you getting real true enjoyment out of and what has become like just part of the mindlessness or like you said, maybe motivated by feeling like you should be on there or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's great. That's great.
And then with Twitter, what Twitter used to be my social network of choice. When I first got online, or not I got online, but when social media started to become a bigger thing than just blogs and it was the different platforms, I was on MySpace for a hot minute. People posted way too many glittery pictures of fairies and I mean, that was weird. Anyway, then Facebook and Twitter, I feel like I got on those platforms at around the same time and I ignored Facebook for a long time. I just didn't, it didn't speak to me. I didn't really feel like I understood it. The visual plus text wasn't my thing. I liked speaking in like little pithy statements. I thought Twitter was so fun. And it was when Twitter was really just exploding. And so this was 2007, 2008. Okay. It was just starting to explode, and I was on there and having such a good time and making like real friendships with people and professional relationships I still have to this day. I mean, I really do credit a lot of my blog's growth with Twitter early in the early years. But at some point, you know, things get oversaturated. Yes. And I realized that I had at some point somehow managed to follow 5,000 people, more than 5,000 people. It was a ridiculous amount, a number. And it was because at first I just followed everybody because I thought, oh, it'd be kind of rude not to follow this person.
And that became strategy. I mean, then later there became a strategy part of that following back. And...
Right, right. It, well, at first it was like, well, I don't think I'm better than this person, so I'll just follow them because they followed me, so why not? And then I by the time I realized it was totally overwhelming and I couldn't keep up with it anymore, I knew that there were people who were following me who I legitimately wanted to follow back that I couldn't even find them because there was so much noise. It was just ridiculous. Mm-hmm. So and it wasn't fun for me, and I wanted Twitter to be fun for me again. So I went, I don't know, maybe in January or something, and I literally unfollowed every single person that I follow on Twitter. I did a clean sweep, and I oh my gosh, I have to remember the name of the
you used an app or something.
I used a website.
Okay.
And you can sign up for a like for
it's not Unroll Me, right?
No, that's a different one.
That's like a
For email.
That's an unsubscribe. Yeah. It's something like that. Yeah.
I'll put it in the show notes. If you do a Google search for like clean out Twitter followers or something, or unfollow everyone on Twitter, it came up pretty high. And I had to sign up for a temporary membership because it's technically a premium service, but I got like a 15-day trial membership. And it did look like a cool service. If I had more of a need for that right now, I might have, you know, actually gotten the paid version. But I did it. I completely wiped everybody out. I posted, hey, please don't take offense. I just have no idea who I'm following anymore. It's getting too noisy in here. If you interact with me, I will follow you back.
Right.
Well, Twitter has vastly changed in the last few years. So not that many people saw my post and interacted back because, you know, my theory is most people on Twitter aren't actually there anymore.
Right. Right.
And, you know, there's a lot of bot accounts and spam and crap I don't want to see. So slowly I've added back about 250 people who I knew that I really wanted to follow. And that's about perfect for right now. When I get on, I see things from earlier today. It's not like it's updating at a rate of, you know, 10 posts per half second or whatever. And it just feels like I still don't use it a ton, but when I do go in there, if I feel like having a conversation, I can have a real conversation.
Yeah.
Oh, and I have one more that I use. I completely forgot till this moment. I was having a real problem with Facebook. Facebook and I had to break up for a while. Well, like I said, with the anxiety, but I also would find myself getting in the cycle where I'd start getting mad about stuff, like stupid stuff, and getting embroiled in really dumb, like really dumb debates that I just don't have time for. So I put a blocker on my browser.
Yes, I was going to, I had a note to ask you about that because I remember you talking about that.
So this one it's a Chrome extension, and I'm going to look up the name right now. I can never remember how to use Chrome. Okay, it's just called Block Site.
Okay.
It's a Chrome extension, and you can download it. And it's so funny because this, it's obviously not, it was not made by someone who, for whom English is their first language. So I would try to get in forgetting that it was enabled. And this little guy, he looked like a, like a plumber or something, would pop up on the screen and it would say something like, I have told you not to be accessing this site. And every time it would, you have tried to check the Facebook 16 times, and it would get, you know, it would start to threaten me and kind of mock me and make fun of me. So that became kind of funny. And then I know, you know, for work, I have to use Facebook. Mm-hmm. So I went in another browser that I don't use very often, which for me is Safari, and I set it up so that as soon as I try to go to Facebook, it automatically forwards me to the Happiest Home Facebook page.
I have a bookmark for that too. And I do try when I am using Facebook for work, I'll just go directly there.
Yeah.
And often it works. Like I do what I need to do and get out of there.
Well, because otherwise it's like I would go to Facebook totally meaning to do work.
Right.
And then I would get sucked in. And, I didn't even really know how it happened. And I just see sitting there an hour later like, what? You know, so... Anyway, I guess some of those strategies sound a little bit pathetic, right?
I don't think so. I think that there are all little things that really do help. And maybe even backing up to how you kind of know that you need help. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, I think you said it best when it feels like, you just feel like depleted almost, like yes. after whether it's 5 minutes or 2 hours, rather than, wow, I got some really good ideas and, you know, I read an inspiring article. You usually feel like something's been taken out of you rather than added to you, right?
That's so true.
And then there's some guilt that goes along with what you could have done with that 2 hours or what your kids were doing while you were mindlessly staring at your phone.
Exactly.
And I know for me, there's a definite correlation is if I'm already feeling like a little bit crappy, I for sure tend to do it more, which of course is like any addictive behavior.
Right.
Like when you need it the least is when you seek it out the most. Like if I'm just really tired or if it's the end of the week or I just don't like even want to engage with my real life is when you slip down that hole. So I think just identifying that, and there's been a lot, like you see people who say they go on a, you know, social media, like cold turkey sign off. And that's never really been my style. I kind of just would prefer to keep tabs on how it's making me feel. And when I need to scale back, to do that, you know, you and I both did it over the holidays too. It's
it's
in those times when you realize like, this could get to an unhealthy place. And so sort of like doing that intervention on yourself. Oh, and I have one last thought on that from the intervention perspective is sometimes I tell my husband or even my kids that I'm, you know, I feel like I've been looking at my phone a little bit too much lately and I'm really trying to be better about it. First of all, I think that it's nice when your kids see that you're trying to, you know, do something better in your life, but also then they'll call you out on it. Remember you told the story about your kids calling you out about gossiping? Like if they know that you're trying to do better, they'll call you out. And my husband too will just sort of gently be like, you know, hello.
Yeah, exactly. Hey.
So, it's not a bad thing to just say, you know, hey, I have a goal that I'm going to not be looking at my phone as much this week. So you guys can call me out if I'm doing it. I think that really helps too.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And a couple of things that popped up while you were talking. One is, and I know we're going to talk about replacing, or not replacing, creating a better media diet in a little bit. So I don't want to touch on that too much yet. But I do want to say that, for example, over the holiday, it's not hard for me to walk away from my phone because my life is so full of other rewarding stuff.
Right, right.
So I think sometimes, you know, sometimes it's not like dieting where you're taking something away. It's like adding in vegetables. You know, it's
like
adding in the good stuff. And we'll talk about that more with media, but that can also be taking a walk. And I've started to leave my phone at home. You know, it used to be I'd want to go for a walk and then it'd be this big like to do because I'd have to find my wireless headphones. And I'm like, well, what, you know, am I going to wear something with a pocket so I can put my phone in the pocket? Or, you know, am I going to strap it onto my arm with one of those sweaty arm thingies, which never feels good. And it's useful for like running or whatever. But I thought, no, I could just actually just go for a walk and just look at the scenery. How about I do that? Things like that, or just, you know, removing myself from the situation and doing something, whether it's active or with my hands or something that just doesn't involve that. And I think for those of us who work, even if it's just a little bit on the computer, or, you know, not as a writer necessarily, but if we're sitting at a desk and there's a computer there, it's just so tempting. And sometimes if you have the luxury of getting up and walking away, don't feel bad about that. Like you're not getting your work done. I look at it as a mental reboot. Like I am doing what I have to do to get my brain in a place where I can be productive because there's no point staring at a computer pretending to work like you know, clicking away from the Facebook anytime one of your coworkers walks by or whatever. I mean, I'm sure that's something.
Totally. And you're always more productive when you sit back down, right?
I mean,
then what was 2 hours of marginal work, then you come away and come back to 30 minutes of actual, you know, get it done.
Yes.
Yes.
Totally. Absolutely.
Awesome. No, I think those are all pretty legit tips, if I do say so. Almost makes me want to try a few of them again. My biggest downfall, then we'll move on, is the camera because I love to take pictures. I love Instagram. And that really is something that adds to my experience. It's a creative outlet for me.
Yeah.
I'm not doing any personal blogging at a regular level right now. So it really is that kind of micro blog. And I love the combination of pictures and words, you know, so that it's like, that is truly, I would say I would keep that if I'm curating, but my camera is my phone. So when you reach, you know, when I reach for it to take a picture or to quickly share a picture with some words, it's just then how do you then put it back down rather than also checking your email, also going here, checking back 5 minutes later to see who liked your picture. Do you know what I mean? So that's a struggle for me. And I have a big, a regular camera. But the truth is for most of us that our cameras are in our pockets, you know,
exactly.
So that's only out a certain time. So that's always been sort of like a tricky spot for me is because that where to keep that sort of creative part that's a positive without like just then my phone is always in my hand or always in my pocket.
You know, the way I do that, and that's not, you know, that I'm not a natural photographer, so that's not such something that I struggle with as much, but I did notice myself kind of falling into that. Mostly when we were having what felt like a novel experience or when my kids were doing something particularly cute and I think, oh, I want to document this. And so I've become a big fan of the later gram. I will take my phone out, take a flurry of pictures. I mean, half the time if you're outside, you can't see them anyway. It's so bright.
Yes.
So I just snap a whole bunch of pictures, put the phone back in my pocket, finish our walk or our trip to the beach or whatever it is we're doing, go home. And then that's when I take a look at the pictures and decide what I'm going to send. And it just, it's dumb because you're just putting it off, but it's actually helps because then during this special moment, I'm not absorbed in my phone.
And you're right. When you're outside, actually, I'm just thinking about like the beach and stuff that you do that anyway, because you can't see and you don't want to like drop your phone in the ocean, but you're right. Just in general, that is totally. Yeah.
And most people aren't going to know if it's a true Insta.
Or later.
Who cares anyway?
And who cares?
We get to decide how we use this stuff. So
Totally. Yeah. All right. So let's move on to kind of talking about other forms of media, or if we're cutting back on mindless social media, what can we replace that with? So this is something I've actually been really intentional about since January. I never make New Year's resolutions, and I wouldn't call this a New Year's resolution, but more of like, okay, new year, I'm ready to I wanted to reintroduce some different forms of reading and news and media, because I just felt like I'm coming out of like baby new mom stage. My youngest is 2, not having any more. So I no longer need to be like sitting on the couch nursing all the time, or like waiting for a baby to wake up from a nap all the time. I'm still there a little bit, but I can see the light. And you know, this is something you've written and talked a ton about, and I've gotten actually a lot of inspiration from you. So that's like part of moving beyond baby, if you will. For me, was bringing back different things to read and think about that don't just have to do with like the immediate raising of my children, because really that's like, basically if I scroll Facebook, it's article after article that kind of speaks to where I am currently, validates it. It's either like a funny blog post, like 10 reasons why feeding your toddlers, like, you know, living with an insane person, and all of those, they're funny. It's funny. I write stuff like that sometimes, and I love to read stuff like that. But there is a point at which everything I was reading and encountering online was only validating where I was currently. And it started to feel like icky in a way. Like
you get tired of yourself.
Yes, I'm tired of myself. And because I'm a writer as well, then I just felt like I don't want to write that stuff because I don't want to read it. But on the other hand, I mean, when it's well done, it is definitely a part of who I am right now. So does that make sense? So that's kind of where this came from. So that's kind of, and so here's just a couple things that I did. The first thing that I did was start getting the Sunday newspaper again, which has been really fun. So we moved to Southern California like 9 months ago. And so we are getting the LA Times on Sundays. And when my husband and I first got together, we lived in Chicago, and we read the Tribune almost every day, but especially on the weekends. And you know, he would do the crossword and I would read like the arts and the books, and, you know, it just like made me feel like a grown up, quite honestly, like in my 20s. And then of course, like with kids and news moving online, there's no reason to need a newspaper, but it has been really fun to look forward to the newspaper every Sunday. And what I find is I don't read the whole thing. Of course, I end up recycling parts that I never looked at, but what I do read is totally different from anything that I would encounter my social media,
because nobody would be sharing that stuff.
Because nobody would be sharing it, and it doesn't have to be.
It becomes an echo chamber, like you said.
Exactly,
you know?
Exactly. Yeah. It's not all been hard news. I mean, I'm still not the best. I still get much of my international news and like, you know, whatever people are fired up about on Facebook. So I'm not like, I haven't turned into like a super literate, you know, current events person, but I might like read an article about like a play or a book that I had no idea about. I've really been kind of eating up local news because this is a new town for us. So like, that's the other thing about Facebook is nothing's local. I mean, you have your local friends, but, it's hard to, like, everything is sort of generically, there's not a lot that's geographically local. I think you can speak to this because you're pretty rooted in your town. Your kids, you've been there a while. Your kids have been in school there. I'm just so new here that I'm like, I actually kind of find myself liking like local news, you know, and sometimes local news, whether it's the newspaper or the TV news, it's often like poorly written or poorly done and it's cheesy, but I kind of find myself liking it anyway because I'm new here and it's like, it's all new news to me. So the newspaper and like watching a little local news, and seeking out, like more my state and my town, has been really kind of a nice, breath of fresh air as compared to, like you said, the echo chamber of all these articles that are just about my life, basically. Does that make sense? I feel like I talked for a really long time.
Well, it was all interesting or I would have interrupted you. Just kidding. no, I totally agree. To the local thing, I mean, I've lived in this town for going on 7 years, maybe. Mm-hmm. I think going on seven, I don't even know. I'm losing track. But about, you know, I'm kind of at the point now where I'm no longer a newbie, but because I was sort of holed up with little kids at home, mm-hmm. for so long, I'm now just sort of starting to come out where people actually, I'm not just the phantom mom who people know of, but have never seen. And so, I get that too. You know, one of my favorite Facebook, I don't even know how I wound up following this Facebook page or group, I guess, is like this local food reviews group.
Oh, cool.
And I love it because first of all, it can be hilarious because people will like, review the local Dairy Queen. Or like when Wendy's came out with ghost pepper chili fries or something, people were doing reviews of that, which I thought was hysterical and very quaint, because we don't have that many restaurants, frankly.
Right.
It's a lot of rehashing of the same stuff, but it's just, it's interesting. It's like, those are the people that live in my town, and doing community theater has also made me more connected with people in my town because those are the people that I see if I'm in a show and then I come out, I see people in the audience and those are like my real people. These are the people that live in my neighborhood too.
Yeah.
Quote a Sesame Street song from way back in the day. But so it's been a completely, like, just getting out in that way has been a completely, and it's made me appreciate that local stuff, like you said, more.
Yeah.
I have also noticed that, you know, and this isn't any secret. I mean, this is just how Facebook's algorithm works. The more you interact with a certain page, the more that you'll see that page. So if there's something that's valuable to you, click those links. Like if you want to read New York Times, click a few New York Times links. I promise you then you will get sick of it because all you'll see in your feed is New York Times. But
that's,
I mean,
true.
Just anything that you think that you're into, click those articles that are longer form that people are talking about and read them.
Right.
And, you know, you mentioned the echo chamber, or we both did. And I think one thing that can be really difficult now with social media, I think it's double-sided, right? I think 10 years ago, the news decided what we were going to consume, and we didn't get much choice. So there would be things like, for example, Ferguson. If that had been underreported, most of us never would have known about it. Or Baltimore.
Right.
I mean, people, we just literally, it would have been a blip.
Right.
But now things can also take over our feeds and give it this false sense of importance in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like I need to be equally outraged, interested, you know, passionate, opinionated about like everything that the people in my feed are passionate, interested, opinionated about, whatever. And sometimes I just, there's not room in my life for every single topic.
And you forget it. You forget that it's not representative of what like real news is out there. Like my husband and I will sometimes compare notes at the end of the day. So he's a huge sports fan. He also, he follows politics and is interested in politics. And he, so we have pretty different, you know, interest, and he uses Twitter more as a, he never posts, but he does use it to kind of follow certain things. And so like sometimes at the end of the day, he'll be like, did you see this or did this come up in your feed? And I'd be like, I have no idea what you're talking about, you know, because like we've just, like you said, these algorithms and this sort of self-selection, which started out as a good thing. Like, I want to know more about this. But then it, like, you forget. And the new, going back to the, like, the old fashioned newspaper has been, I've really liked that part of it because someone else has decided editorially what to put in front of me that week, whether I like it or not. And it's been fun. You know, my kids are at an age where they're starting to read. They're interested in so many things. It's like that really fun age where like they don't think stuff is boring yet. Like they don't think anything's boring if we present it in the right way. So that's been another fun thing about the newspaper is that we just come across things, or I read articles about something that never would have crossed my feed and I wouldn't have really like sought out. So it's just felt like a positive sort of like enriching thing.
Yeah, that's really cool. And it's funny that you mentioned you and your husband doing that because John and I, if we, we never read the same stuff. If he brings something up and I've seen it, I'm surprised.
Yeah.
Or if I, you know, if I bring something up and he's like, oh yeah, that's interesting to me, then I'm actually like kind of proud of myself. Like, wow.
Right.
But it's so funny, like a couple weeks ago, there was, or maybe last week, I don't know, I'm losing track of the days, there was the last episode of Grey's Anatomy.
Mm-hmm.
or is it the last? Yep. I don't even
know. No, I think, but something extreme happened.
Big happened. So, yeah. And I like chimed in on a couple of people's posts who said, I literally did not know that show was still on. And I was like, I didn't either. And so then the next day, a bunch of people posted, you know, kind of like annoyed, like, I just don't believe that people didn't know The Greatest Anatomy is still on. I think that's your way of saying you're better than me because I watch it and you don't. And I said, no, I sincerely had no idea. I don't care who watches Grey's Anatomy. I never did watch it. So it's not like I feel like I'm over it. I was never in it to begin with. But I said, honest to God, just like Survivor is still on, The Simpsons is still on.
Right.
I had no idea. And so somebody, you know, there was this long discussion about it. And someone's like, but even if you're not into that show, like, you know, she said that I keep seeing it come up with like The Hollywood Reporter and Parade and People. And I said, but I don't follow any of those.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I could literally be living in a completely different news world than the people that I'm right up against. It's so bizarre. And again, like I've definitely had my share of, you know, guilty pleasure TV show. So it's not a judgment thing at all. And I did watch ER for a long time. And I sometimes mix the two shows up, I think, as well. Like, I keep thinking, didn't that show end a whole, you know, like a decade ago? But I think that was actually ER. Yeah. But it's just so funny to me that we can have such vastly different experiences. So that also brings me to what I was going to talk about next, which is, you know, adding in, and this is going to sound really corny, but adding in better media. I'm watching more TV lately. And I had completely stopped watching TV. We only have one television in our house. It's in the, you know, central area of the house, and the kids usually get to it first. Mm-hmm. And I just, I don't know, if I had to choose, I would usually choose to just hole up in my room or in my office or whatever and stay online.
Right.
And what I realized is I already do enough of that. So John and I actually made a conscious decision to start watching TV together because, there's a lot of really good programming.
So good. You and I like had a 30-minute discussion about TV. I think it was on the home hour. But
okay. I guess we don't have to rehash that whole thing.
Yeah. But, there's much good TV on.
There's
I agree.
So much good
That's
TV.
That's why I don't go to movies because I don't need movies anymore.
So it sounds funny in the day where people are kind of snobby about TV and, you know, and we probably discussed that too. I'm starting to repeat myself.
Like, no. We mostly talked about what shows we're watching.
That's right.
You and I have a lot of common shows.
But when we really made an effort to start doing that together, and like that was one of the things that we wanted to do, I felt so, like I'd feel so much better at the end of a great episode of Sherlock or True Detective or House of Cards or whatever and think, gosh, that was stimulating. And wow, I know something I didn't know before about something. And I watched someone really great at their craft.
Yep.
It was a completely different feeling than I just watched two people bicker about whether or not you should recline your seat on an airplane on Facebook for the last hour, which I've also done. You know, it's just like that. It's the difference between what feeds you and what doesn't and what, you know.
And for another person, TV could be the mindless guilty pleasure. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that you can have on in the background and stuff that you get sucked into, even though you know, like, this is such a waste of time. And so for someone else, that icky feeling could be related to what they're watching on TV and maybe reading online would actually be enriching. So it's like, it's kind of like figuring out what's become mindless time suck and what to replace it with that maybe it's just the novelty. Like maybe, you know, just changing up the media is enough to like break that cycle, even if you're replacing crap with crap of a different of a different color.
I totally
agree on TV.
We talked a little bit about clicking around things on Facebook to get your algorithm the way you want it, to kind of curate your Facebook experience. But when I did my big Twitter scorched earth sweep. I did go back through and very specifically followed like the BBC. I followed McSweeney's, which do you ever read McSweeney's?
Funny. When I click on something, it's so funny.
So funny and so smart. And The Onion and just stuff that I knew I wanted to see, but was getting lost. So that's another way to do that. You know, just follow it.
And Facebook, not to get too technical, but they do have interest lists, which, I have used a little bit and it is a good way to group like Twitter's lists. So that then you truly don't miss something that has been not shown up or buried in your feed if you create an interest list. So I have one for blogs and bloggers that are really inspiring for me. And I have another for local pages. When I first moved here, I just liked everything, the local newspaper, the local fire department, you know, like, so that is another way to curate a little bit on Facebook is to use those interest lists. I don't know. For me, it's like, then you're still on Facebook. You still get distracted by the shiny object.
It's kind of like you gotta be careful, but it's a little bit better.
It is a little bit better. So, okay. So I want to talk about one other, okay. I have one other tip, and then I want you to talk a little bit about, both music and podcasts, because you're really good, I feel like, about seeking out new music and really enjoying the music you listen to. And then also we both love podcasts, but before that, real quick, my other tip is to kind of introduce or sign up for some email lists or some media that's outside your life entirely. So I'll give you a couple examples. I am on Instagram a lot and I love Instagram, but most of the things I'm seeing are other people's kids. Like I post pictures of my kids. And that's okay because they're either people I know really well, I'm personally friends with, or they're people I've connected to. And like, we're just sharing this time in our life. But I've started purposely following Instagram accounts of things that are a little outside of my everyday life, some design and home ones that are just beautiful things to look at. So either like they're either put out by a magazine or like a design blog or something that I just wouldn't have sought out before because that's not typically my first thought. Right. And then also, you know, I have a ballet background and I was a dancer for years. And so somehow I like started following one ballet company who then like tags their actual ballerinas and the dancers and the directors and the choreographers. And I now follow all of these ballet accounts, either personal accounts or, you know, brand accounts. And so I get the most like stunning photos and videos of something that was once, you know, a really important part of my life that's just beautiful in my Instagram feed. And it's been like, I get so happy when I see like a little video clip of Swan Lake or something in my Instagram feed. So I think finding those things that are, that you love, but maybe haven't connected with for a long time or that you aspire to in the future, like, and just following those accounts or signing up. I've started signing up for email lists more and not for like, no offense, Huffington Post, but I don't need the daily digest of HuffPo parents.
You already,
I already see it. And for a while I was kind of doing that. And now I'm unsubscribing from those and subscribing to things that I'm not seeing enough of. Like there's a couple like parenting writers that I really love, but that's not stuff that's being like thrown at you all the time.
Right.
And people doing really good email, you know, email communications with their subscribers or just beautiful, like beautiful visuals. So that was my other tip, is to find the things that you're not seeing enough of and seek them out and put them in the feeds that you're already going to. So if you are already on Facebook, then just like you said, it kind of goes back to the same thing you said, start clicking or engaging with the things you want to see more of, or just go the extra step, go to their website and sign up for their email list so that it really is, you're teaching things to come to you that you want and little by little weeding out what you don't, I guess.
It's so easy to get stuck in this rut where all you think about, read about, talk about is parenting.
Yeah.
And your kids and what's right in front of you.
Yeah.
And you forget about the stuff that used to be important to you.
Yeah.
And it's not even you don't forget about it. You just aren't engaging in it. You're not engaging in it in the same way.
Yes, exactly. But I feel like you are really good at that, but maybe it's because I'm watching you farther ahead.
Well, this has been a long process. I mean, and even just to another example, this isn't quite the same. It's not like online media. I might have talked about this in another show actually, but I think I talked about this with Karen Walrond in that episode that you probably listened to.
I'll tell you if you're
ready. Okay. So you know that I love theater. I used to go see a ton of theater. And I've lived in this town for 7 years and just started going to see local theater last year. I would, every time I went on a trip, I'd go see a show. Every time I went to New York, I'd see something on Broadway. Every time, you know, my husband and my sister and her boyfriend and I take this big trip every year to the Stratford Theater Festival, Shakespeare Festival in Ontario. And we go see like show after show after show. It's fantastic. But I'd be sitting here in my own town with a theater with really, you know, good stuff, really reasonably priced tickets right down the road. And I never went because it was too much. Like I couldn't break out of, that's not my normal routine. So I'd be like, my normal routine is I work all day and then I pick my kids up and then they come home and I make dinner. And then, you know, maybe I hang out with my husband for a little while and then I go to bed. And anything that didn't fit in that, including media, including TV at the time, including music or whatever, just never made it. And so that was something I really thought, this is dumb. You know, I'm missing out on something I love because I'm just not seeing it right in front of me because I'm letting what I think my life is and who I think I am get in the way. And so that's been really great. And
that's a great extension of some of this, if you change up the sources that are coming to you, whether it's like the newspaper or following different feeds, or then you may actually end up also diversifying your experiences, right? Because you're being like, you're actually hearing about the play down the street or whatever. Right. So I
and
love
the local,
that.
The local media thing is great. It's great for that. Whether it's a newspaper or, you know, the website of your local newspaper or whatever it is. Right. But I do like the idea of getting a physical paper.
Yeah. I think I cut you off. Sorry. You were going to say
Okay. So you mentioned music. So I have to actually credit, I have to credit John for this, my husband. He kind of just went on a, I tend to get in musical, like I really love music I know and have carried around with me my whole life, like a little comforting blanket. Mm-hmm. I love like the stuff that I grew up with, like the 70s music my parents used to listen to. And I actually, actual quote from my trip I just took with two friends to Florida, Bob Seger is my spirit animal. That actually came out of me at some point. So, I mean, I'm just really attached to that music. And if it was up to me, like if nobody ever shook me out of my, out of that sort of rut, I could just listen to that, that stuff on a loop, like all day long. But my husband, John, has really gotten on a tear of listening to new music and seeking out really good music over like the last year or so.
My husband's good about that too. They would probably have fun.
Oh, I'm sure. And he creates these elaborate playlists. And I've just, you know, sometimes there's a little resistance for me like, oh, I don't know that song. Or I don't know that artist. Yeah. Do I really want to invest? But I have to say now, I mean, I know so many good songs and so many good artists I never would have thought to ever listen to, better than what's on the radio. And not that I listen to the radio that much anyway, because who listens to the radio anymore?
I don't.
It's like when I'm in the car, I'm listening to either podcasts or I'm just not in the car long enough to even bother.
Or Spotify. I mean, Spotify. I do Spotify in the car. Yeah.
Yeah. Or I've got NPR on, but I just don't often just flip through the stations the way I might have, you know, 10 years ago.
Right.
But so we've gone to a few concerts and there's a lot of younger people at these concerts because there's mostly like more up and coming music that I wouldn't have known about. But it's been really, I don't want to say mind expanding. That sounds like we're on acid or something, but it's just been really cool. Like, it has been kind of mind expanding. Like, wow, there's this all this great
and
music out there.
It's creativity. It's just like watching the good actors on TV and so when do you, this is kind of a dumb question, but like, when do you listen, do you put music on at home when you're working or when you're making dinner? Like, here's one thing I feel like I also don't, I'm not adventurous in music, but I sometimes even forget to put music on. And when I do, it's totally a mood boost. And we're going, if we're going back to this, like mindlessness, it's something mindful to do, to have an input source.
Right.
That's not some of these other negative ones. So I'm curious, like when I just sometimes forget that putting on music is an option.
Yeah. I was exactly the same way for a long time. Now I will say that I can't always work and listen to music at the same time. Depends on what I'm working on.
I
can't really write heavy stuff and have, you know, music playing at the same time. That said, there's almost no other time of day that I couldn't and wouldn't be enhanced by having music on. So I love Spotify, and having playlists, really helps with that because you don't have to think about it so hard.
Yes. And do you use, like, I use the ones that are already made. Like, I don't even make my own playlist because I feel like other people know
have done
music
really
even
well.
Better than I do. So,
I
like,
do that
or even.
Or make a radio station if you really like a song. Yeah. Just, you know, start like play radio. If you're not on Spotify, we should definitely link that up in the show notes because I love it. I know there's other services out there, but I feel like this one is easy to use. It's super intuitive. It's easy to share music.
Yeah.
And everything is on it.
Everything's on there.
And
I agree.
You can use
We used free Pandora for a long time, and I was resistant to paying for anything because I'm not a big music consumer. But the kids stuff actually is what kind of sold me. They have some audio stories for kids and stuff. They have all kinds of stuff on Spotify that it's totally, for me, it's totally worth it to have the paid account now.
Yeah.
But
it took
me a long time to get there.
Spotify has definitely changed that for us. So John is the playlist master. I mean, I've got one that I made last year called Breakfast Making Jams. It's like all 70s jams. It took me the whole summer to create it. It's like 6 hours long. It's pretty much my work of art. It's my masterpiece.
It's awesome.
I don't feel like I need to make any new playlists now. I've done my work and I've shared it with everybody who would enjoy it. And there you go. There's my contribution to the world.
Nice.
But John has this really long one that he just kind of keeps adding to. And then he very carefully decides from that master playlist, like which of his sub playlists he's going to share. He's very specific about it. I'm not that specific. I just listen to all his playlists.
Yeah.
So I just, sometimes I'll just get up and, you know, if I think about it, we've got our Bose right on the kitchen counter.
Mm-hmm.
And we made it really easy to connect to it. So it's, if I look at it and think, oh, I'd really like to listen to some music right now. I've also got Spotify on my desktop so that if I don't feel like getting up and fiddling with Bluetooth or whatever, I can just turn it on.
Yeah.
It's a habit, right? It's just adding it and doing it again and again, like anything else.
I love that. So, I love that what you said about finding the new artists too, because that is, it's hard to do if you're in your
I like the radio team. Feature for that. I found that I really found some good stuff just by falling down that rabbit hole. Stuff I just, how do you not, it's so funny that there's so many good artists out there that you literally would never hear on the radio.
And the other thing I think can be fun with music, like if we're talking about this kind of like feeding yourself good stuff, is listening to a genre that you maybe haven't listened to in a long time, you know, or that is part of your, and you're, again, you're probably just better about this naturally than I am, but like, I just went like recently, like pulled all the Indigo Girls, all the Ani DiFranco, all the Patty Griffin of my teenage, and put it into, I didn't even really curate very well, but I just was like, I don't even necessarily identify or love that music right now in my life. And there's some of it that I just plain wouldn't listen to again, but it was like so from a bygone era and it made me so happy to hear songs that I loved when I was 16. You know what I mean? So that's like, again, like changing up what's just automatic. So if some part of music has become automatic, then either finding new artists or going way back, like throwback style.
I love doing that.
Yeah, because it, you know, music's powerful that way. So
yeah, for sure. And I think sometimes it's stuff like, for me, 90s country, which I just would never run into again. Right. There's no mechanism by which I'm going to accidentally hear this song by, you know, Clay Walker or whoever I was really into in the 90s. But you're so right. It does take you right back, right? It takes you right back to that place. And it's really fun and really cool.
Yeah, I agree.
I feel like we should wrap up by talking about podcasts, don't you?
Yes, let's do. I know. Okay. I kind of saved it. Well, you single-handedly definitely got me into listening to podcasts. But what are you listening to lately, or how do you use podcasts to, okay, so let's assume that we have the same echo chamber idea where you can get in a habit of filling your brain with the same kind of media. How do you use podcasts to not do that? Because you could use podcasts just to do that. Listen to
absolutely.
The same.
Well, I find that so first of all, I have to say that I think you're actually a little bit better about this than me, because I think you've incorporated podcasts into your family's life in a way that I haven't yet. And I'm not exactly sure why that is, except that I think I've been in such a business mindset for the last year or two that I've tried to listen mostly either to podcasts that tell me how to do podcasting better or podcasts that are about things that I'm already talking about, so I can kind of see what's out there. And so I switch on and off. Like, I don't keep – I'll subscribe to stuff and then I'll listen to it for a while and then I'll just switch it all up and listen to completely new stuff.
Right.
And also I go in phases, and this is something maybe you can identify with, where – for a while, I just listen to podcasts, and for a while, I just listen to music. And I don't always switch back and forth really well. So right now, I'm definitely in a music listening, podcast creating phase.
Okay.
Whereas when I was more not really creating as many podcasts, I was listening to more of them. I don't know if that I just burned out because I was already talking so much, you know?
Right.
So talk about yours, actually. I think the ones I listen to wouldn't interest, you know, the typical person as much, maybe. But
okay.
A typical person, but you know what I mean? Someone who's not interested from a business perspective.
Okay, well, here's one. If anybody's been under a rock and didn't listen to Serial, I did. Last time you and I talked about this, I had not listened to Serial. I did just start listening to Serial. For those of you who maybe don't know, it was put out by This American Life on NPR, and it's sort of a true crime drama that unfolds as you listen for 12 episodes, I think. But it was wildly popular, a couple months ago? And I hadn't listened. That one's been a fun one for me recently because we just joined a gym, which is a totally different story, but I do have treadmill time now. And so part of my problem with listening to podcasts is someone interrupts me literally every 45 seconds. So it can be frustrating. And so I tend to listen in the car when I only have the 2-year-old, but even she requests like the Olaf song now, you know, so I have very little like auditory media time that is truly mine. But now I have gym time. And so Serial's been good. And then, I will mention that we have been listening to a couple podcasts with the kids. I talked about Brains On in our first episode of this show, which is a science podcast for kids. That's awesome. We just found this one for Harry Potter fans because the big kids are listening to or are reading. We're reading aloud Harry Potter to them. And there is this awesome podcast called Potter and Daughter,
I love it.
Which is like basically they go through kind of book club style, and it's a guy and his 7-year-old daughter, and they go kind of chapter by chapter and just discuss the book. So we only listen along with what we've read so far. Otherwise there would be spoilers for sure. But they love it, and it's great. I mean, it's great. It's kind of teaching them to like think about what you've read and talk about it. And the girl on it is only 7. She's so cute. But her dad's very good. The adult is an experienced, I don't know, media person of some kind. He's good at like moving the discussion forward. I can't imagine recording with my 7-year-old. But so that's I don't have as much like solo listening time. So yeah, I feel like true. It's almost sometimes I wish I had more. I'm loving you and Jessica's Write at Home Moms because they're like 18 minutes long. So that's like almost easier for me. But yeah, I've kind of gone in and out of podcasts, and I don't even know if it's one of the media that is like that I'm using to the fullest right now. Does that make sense?
I'm definitely not. And I think for part of it is because there just aren't enough shows yet.
Yeah.
In this niche that, you know, in this about what I want to listen to.
Right.
So I kind of just automatically end up falling into listening to business ones because there's really good business ones. So if anyone's interested, you know, Smart Passive Income is one that I love. If you want to know more about running a business online, you can always listen to the Write at Home Moms with Jessica and I, which is at lifelistened.com.
Right.
And there's a few other ones that are pretty good in that niche. America's Test Kitchen is one that I just go back to again and again. It's so well done. It's put out by Public Radio International, and it's I think it's a spinoff from a show on PBS. Mm-hmm. But this is the main players from that show do a podcast, a weekly podcast. It's really well done. It's really well produced. Good storytelling, but lots of questions. And it's kind of like a mixture between a really good food-related story and then like food-related Q&A.
Right.
And some wine reviews and fun stuff like that. I'm going through my list right now to see what else I've been listening to lately. Oh, there's a fun one called Spilled Milk, which I like a lot. Okay. And it's just this guy and this girl who talk about food. That's all.
Oh, nice.
They make something fun and then they eat it.
Well, as you're talking too, I'm realizing that there's so many people for whom podcast is a totally brand new genre. And you and I have probably searched. We've just been listening a little bit longer and maybe have run out of some of the new shows. But if you're listening to this and you are new to podcasts and you're looking to change up the media that's going into you, definitely do searches. Megan, you taught me to do a search for, rather than search for a show topic, search for a guest. Wasn't that one of your tips one time?
Search for the name of someone you're interested in.
Yeah, whether it's like a celebrity or a chef or like an author. And then often their name will pop up on different podcasts.
Yeah, any show they've been a guest on that mentioned them, they'll come up. That's a really good way to podcast hop.
Yes. So I think that may be part of this too, is there are people for whom starting to listen to podcasts would actually be a great alternative to some other kind of mindless media that's not adding a lot of value. So I think you and I probably have already been doing it for a little while. So
yeah, we kind of already know
it's
what's out there.
Not as exciting.
So we just covered a lot of media in our media.
Yeah.
Which I hope everyone will consider this to be quality media that they will tune into again and again. I did want to mention one thing I thought of before and then forgot when we got to talking is that I know Gretchen Rubin, I'm sure most people have heard of her, has a theory about some people being abstainers and some people being moderators. And I think you and I, based on our conversation, Sarah, are both moderators. Like if I want to change a behavior, I change it in small ways and I add something new and I take something away and I just kind of adjust and adjust until it feels right for me. But her point is that some people just need to just give it up already. And
cold
so
turkey.
If
that's
cold
right.
turkey,
I had forgotten that about
if cold
her.
Turkey is the way that that you have to do it to, you know, get off of the Facebooks for a while or if you need to leave your phone at home every time you go to the grocery store because you can't stay off of it or whatever it is, that's totally okay too. And I think you have to just know yourself and do what's right for you.
Definitely. I don't know if you read all of Hands Free Mama of Rachel Macy Evans. Am I going to mess up her name? Rachel Macy Stafford, Sorry, Rachel. And Hands Free Mama. And I didn't read that whole book, but that is another, if you really feel like it's gotten to the point of a really negative cycle, I think that book is really inspiring because it may make you want to go cold turkey a little bit. But just from the getting to the root of why we're kind of constantly distracted and a little bit more into really kind of looking at yourself and your priorities. I think, I would recommend that book. I did not read it cover to cover, but I do feel like it's, she's been very influential in talking about that, especially moms of young kids who are just sort of, we've gotten so used to being distracted that we seek out distraction, you know what I mean? And getting into that negative
side. And I think she's also very reasonable about, you know, different approaches working for different people. She's on an episode of the Home Hour. Yeah. We should link to that in the show notes because it was a great interview and she's great. So, and her stuff is always really well done. So
absolutely.
So awesome. Gosh, I guess we should wrap up since it's been an hour. Wow, this really flew. So again, we have to say thank you so much to our sponsors for May and June, Kimberly Clark with the Celebrate Family Values campaign, which is going to be launching both, you know, on the podcast and on thehappiesthome.com over the next couple of months. You can also go to pickupthevalues.com if you want to check out more about that. And we'll be talking more in depth about some of that stuff during the next episode, which will be coming up in a week.
Yep. Gosh, 2 weeks, right?
Oh, two weeks. Yeah. Golly, I have no idea. I don't even know where I am anymore. It's been a crazy
night. Everything is at themomhour.com. So our first three shows and also a link to subscribe, which we would love if you do.
Please subscribe.
And this
it
is
really
a brand new
us.
Show. So if you don't know how iTunes and Stitcher work, if you do leave a rating or review, it not just makes us feel good, but it also helps other people find us when they're searching
and that
around.
Right, so now helps so much because we're in this early phase where we're really trying to get momentum going and get more readers, listeners.
Yeah.
So, and if you want to just drop us a line, you can always go to the Mom Hour and leave a comment on one of the posts or toss us an email at hello@themomhour.com.
We would love it.
We would love it so much. Okay, thank you. Thanks, Sarah, for being on the show, and we'll talk to everybody in a couple of weeks.
It was great. Talk to you soon.